Frank Muir goes into the church and investigates the humor of the profession with the help of Alfred Marx.
A missionary landed on an island to convert the natives, but soon found himself captured by them and placed in a cooking pot. As the cannibals danced around and the water grew hotter, the missionary was suddenly relieved when the chief dropped to his knees and raised his hands in prayer. "Thank goodness," he said. "Does this mean you're a Christian?" "Course I am," said the chief, "and be quiet while I'm saying grace."
The scene is a Sunday school. The teacher speaks. "Now, Tommy, do you know where boys and girls who do naughty things go?"
"Round the back of the cycle sheds."
A man arrives at the gates of heaven and is confronted by St. Peter. "Name," says the saint.
James Evans.
"Did you lie and cheat while you were on earth?"
No.
"Did you drink?"
No.
"Were you promiscuous?"
No.
"Then what kept you so long?" A little girl went regularly to Sunday school, and one day she brought a hand mirror as a present for the vicar. The vicar seemed very pleased and said, "I wonder why she'd chosen to give him a mirror." He said, "Well, now perhaps you won't keep putting your collar on back to front." A young parson, taken for his text, the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. In conclusion, he said, "Now, which would you prefer? The five wise virgins with the light, or the five foolish virgins in the dark?" A man died and went up to heaven, was greeted by St. Peter, who said, "I will give you a tour of heaven." "And on these beautiful fields," he said, "that lot over there, they're all Protestants. Divided into groups, Methodist, Presbyterian, Welsh Baptist, etc. Behind us, we have the Jews. On the right, we have the Muslims. In front of us, the Buddhists. There, the Confucians." And they came to a large area which was ringed by a high boarded fence. And the soul said, "Who's in there?" He said, "Well, they're the Catholics. But don't shout, because they think they're the only ones up here."
Jokes about religion are very rarely about religion itself. They're usually about the social consequences of religion or about the clergy. We've always been rather rotten to the clergy. We demand that they should be human to understand our problems. Then if they're too human, we make jokes about them. And there's a long tradition. Chaucer's pilgrims included some very worldly prelates. Marlowe kept sniping at the church. Christopher Marlowe. Barabbas, his wicked Jew of Malta, advises his equally wicked daughter to disguise herself as a nun. For religion hides many mischiefs from suspicion. At times it seems the clergy can't win. Dean Jonathan Swift observed,
"I never saw, heard, nor read that the clergy were beloved in any nation where Christianity was the religion of the country. Nothing can render them popular but some degree of persecution."
In olden days, there were incredibly more members of the clergy than there are now. Going into the church used to be the obvious course for any young lad with a modicum of education and no money, particularly the younger sons of the gentry. Nowadays, of course, the younger sons of the gentry can be television producers or punch card operators, dropouts. And the church is a much smaller organisation. Many children get their first impressions of the church from their school. They're taught prayers at school, prayers that often get a bit distorted in the children's minds. This is supposed to have been heard in one primary school.
"Our Father, who shouts in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Fighting to come, I will be done."
I do hope that's a true story. Children often find it difficult to distinguish between Bible stories and other stories, between Noddy, Milly Molly Mandy, and baby Jesus. For children, chronology doesn't matter. Some draw pictures of Bible stories with Jesus Christ carrying a suitcase with initials JC on it. They draw him with a bowler hat on. For them and other people in different ways, the Bible is completely modern.
Good even. Here beginneth the first verse of the news. It has come to pass that the seven elders of the seven tribes have now been abiding in Sodom for 7 days and 7 nights. There seems little hope of an early settlement. In the Sanhedrin today, there was a wailing and a gnashing of teeth in the public gallery. When a certain Philistine was accused of writing on the wall at Belshazzar's feast a phrase including two four-letter words. At the weigh-in for the big fight tomorrow, Goliath tipped the scales this evening at 15 stone 3 pounds and David at 14 stone 3 pounds. David's manager said this evening, the odd stone could make all the difference. News of a happy event. In Ramoth Gilead, early this morning, Zebediah begat Naaman. And now for news of the weather, over to Nehemiah Armstrong on Mount Ararat.
Good even. Well, it's been a pretty rough week in the Holy Land, hasn't it? Anyway, let's just have a look at the scroll. Now, we've got a plague of locusts moving in here from the northwest, and they should be in the Tyre and Sidon area about lunchtime tomorrow. Scattered outbreaks of fire and brimstone up here in Tarsus and down here in Hebron. Down in the south, well, Egypt had a pretty nasty spell recently. 17 or 18 days ago, it was frogs, followed by lice, flies, a murrain on the beast. So last Tuesday, locusts, and now moving up from the south-southeast, boils. Further outlook in Egypt, well, 2 or 3 days of thick darkness lying over the face of the land, and then death of all the firstborn. Sorry about that, Egypt.
And finally, here are two police messages. Wood Moses, last heard of 7 months ago on a hiking holiday in the wilderness. Go at once to Egypt, where his people are anxiously awaiting deliverance. At the crossroads between Sodom and Gomorrah early this morning, a Mrs. Lot, of no fixed abode, was turned into a pillar of salt. Will anyone who saw the accident or can give any information, please ring Revelation 777-7777. Good night.
David Hatch and John Cleese in a sketch from Cambridge Circus. That was a show that went on to become I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again on radio. Now let's have a look at religion's big day, Sunday. Other countries to whom Christianity is far more central than Britain manage to have some fun on Sundays. But Britain has always been taught to treat Sundays as a very special day. Here's a letter from the Belfast Newsletter.
I have a pet budgerigar which has a swing in its cage. I've made a practice of disconnecting this swing each Sunday and not putting it back into use until Monday morning. Is this in accord with strict Christian principle?
With another example of rather earlier Puritanism from Richard Braithwaite, writing in the 17th century.
To Banbury came I, O profane one, where I saw a Puritan one hanging off his cat on Monday for killing a mouse on Sunday.
It seems that Sundays are changing. Soon theatres will be open and perhaps other strictures will relax, though not for everybody. Here's a quotation from the old News Chronicle.
Asked to comment on the new campaign, an official of the Lord's Day Observance Society said last night, we don't give statements on Sundays.
A lot of people are more moderate. For most, Sunday is a day of rest. For some, it's a day of church. But even the peace of the church doesn't always keep their minds off more mundane matters.
Hymn number 349.
Peaceful thoughts my mind doth fill. easy and undisturbed. I've just remembered something absolutely ghastly. I forgot to go into the kitchen before we came to church to turn the gas off underneath the chicken bones. I am turning into soup. I know exactly what's going to happen. All the water will boil away and the bottom of the saucepan will get red hot and fall on the floor of the kitchen. And very slowly the linoleum will burn through and set fire to the house. And my fur coat isn't insured. And where are we going to sleep tonight? No troubled thoughts confuse me now. Harmonious is the way. I suppose if I was to make a dash for it, I might be able to rescue the drawing that is supposed to be by Picasso. But I would far rather have my old photograph books and my furry bedroom slippers. Darling, I don't suppose that you went into the kitchen and turned the gas off underneath the soup. No, I was afraid you wouldn't have done. excuse me, ma'am.
Of course, Joyce Grenfell. Attendance at church has always been variable, and from earliest times, ministers have tried various devices to bring backsliders back into the fold. In the Middle Ages, it was a threat of hellfire. Now it's beetle drives and bingo, pet services, doll services, boat services, and some vicars go even further.
Mr. Barclay says in his parish magazine, I know a live church in South London where a football service is held. The local football club members attend in their jerseys and miniature goalposts are erected over the pulpit. When the vicar has preached for 10 minutes, someone blows a whistle and shouts, half time.
Nobody's sent off. From the Daily Mirror, that was. For a number of years now, many ancient British churches have been gently falling to pieces. One of the favourite ways of raising money to prop them up again is the annual Grand Garden Fete.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the Tidwish Parish Council, now I would like to thank all of you who worked so hard at our annual garden fete on Saturday afternoon. As you know, we had hoped to get the famous film star Marlon Brando to open it. In fact, I was on the phone to him in Hollywood only the day before, but unfortunately the pips went before he said anything. However, it was very good of Mr. Thompson from the library to step in at such short notice and open the fete for us and give us such a masterly summing up of the war in Vietnam. And before I go any further, I must put in a word of thanks to the village builders who on Saturday put the marquee up so quickly. And so often. Miss Rubithorne's display of seasonal flowers in vases was a real joy again this year, and all thanks are due to the 2nd Wolf Cup Patrol for getting them back to the cemetery. The brand tub also made a very good profit as there was nothing in it. Cleverly thought out, Mrs. Grant. Now, a special word here for Mr. Potter and his self-peddling magic glider. A jolly good idea. It was just unfortunate that his first trip coincided with the RAF flypast from Tidworth Aerodrome. He thanks you all for the get well cards and hopes to be able to answer them all personally in a month or two. Mr. Marsden, our fortune teller, could not be with us this year owing to unforeseen circumstances. Thank you. But as usual, many of the villagers rallied round to entertain us. Mrs. Hargreaves gave a recital of Gurkha war songs and fertility dances. And P.C. Rogers showed us how to make a typical arrest. Happily, Mrs. Hargreaves was allowed to rejoin us later in the afternoon after questioning. Now we come to the problem of what to do with the proceeds. As you know, the money was to have gone to the Save the Village Hall Fund. But since the hall was burnt down during the fire brigade's How to Put Out a Simple Grass Fire demonstration, this fund is now closed, and the money will be put to our next social function, which is the Darby and Joan Club's performance of Swan Lake at the Open Air Baths. Thank you very much.
Ronnie Barker. Church fates fit very well into the joke image of the Anglican vicar. He's usually depicted as a red-faced man in a straw hat and a light alpaca jacket, rather like a bowls player with a dog collar. And this cartoon figure pedals furiously around the joke world, publishing bans, doing christenings, and reading parish notices. And in jokes, he always publishes the bans, adding, "This is not for the first time of asking." Bangs his foot on the font and christens the child something obscene, and gives church notices full of innuendos about Boy Scouts and Girl Guides meeting in the church hall. And in cartoons particularly, he always has a Save the Steeple fund, with a huge, tall, thin barometer leaning against it. And then there's the parish magazine, one of the great source books for sometimes unintentional comic material. Let's give you a for instance or two.
St. John's Church, Sunday next at 6 p.m, Pearls Before Swine. We should like to see you there.
At the end of the service, the choir will sing a special anthem composed by the organist, after which the church will be closed for necessary repairs.
The preachers for the next 6 weeks will be found nailed up in the porch.
And one of the all-time classics.
We are most grateful to Mr. Blank for his gift of new couplers to our organ, which enabled the organist to change his combinations without using his feet.
Vicars are always busy about their parish business, the round of services, meetings and visits, and of course weddings. A church wedding is an elaborate procedure and rather frightening, certainly for the bride and groom. They are so much the centre of attention that the occasion can take on the qualities of a major sporting event.
And as you join us here at St. Swithin's Church, Epsom, for the Society Wedding Stakes, St. Swithin's is a lovely course where the packed pews give a grandstand view of the runners and riders. Today's meeting is for 21-year-old newlyweds, and down there at the starting post, I can see best man and co-favourite, Hubby-to-be. Hubby-to-be is a tall, sleek stallion, and for this first race is wearing blinkers and wide spats. With me here in the commentator's hymn book cupboard is that experienced wedding-goer, Paddy O'Sullivan.
Well, listeners, we're all waiting for the favourite, June Bride, who is very strongly fancied
by just about everybody.
And here she comes, strutting proudly out of her black limousine horse box, a beautiful Irish filly with a long flowing mane of chestnut hair, slim, powerful legs, and beautifully formed hocks. A quick look at her form reveals that she is carrying 4 pounds overweight.
But on her, it looks good. Now, over to Raymond.
And there's the starter, the Reverend Biggs. Trying to get them under orders. Hard on the altar rails, we have June Bride, who is slightly nudging Hubby-to-be. Hubby-to-be is sweating a lot and champing at the bit, obviously anxious for the off. Now, back to Clive Blackham.
And here's Bride's father, by great expense, out of pocket. And from the same stable, Bride's mother, then comes best man, then chief bridesmaid, a little behind, and bridesmaid the second, a big un. And there goes the off. Yes, the white hassock is up, and they're off. Come in, Robin Badfellow.
And at the start is June Bride and Hubby-to-be neck and neck as they race towards the vestry door turn. June Bride and Hubby-to-be from best man and bride's mother, who doesn't look at all happy, and as they go into vestry door, it's come in, Clive.
And coming up the steps from the vestry door turn, it's up and over for June Bride. Yes. Now, and Hubby-to-be is still holding on, then best man, bride's mother, bride's father, chief bridesmaid, and bridesmaid the second. And there's a tremendous jockeying for position over the marriage certificate. But they're now racing away down the aisle towards the great water jump, so it's over to Raymond at the font.
And they're coming up the church door now, finished with June Bride very much out in front. But now it's Hubby-to-be making tremendous effort. He's neck and neck with June Bride. It's a photo. It must be a photo, yes. The reporter from the local rag has asked for a photograph. What do you think, Clive?
Well, it's as we thought, a tie for first place between Hubby-to-be and June Bride. So we return you to the studio with the news that tomorrow these two fine runners will again be fighting it out between them, this time in the Isle of Wight for the honeymoon handicap.
That was Roy Hudd, with Doug Fisher. One of the features of a Church of England upbringing is complete ignorance for many years that any other religions exist. But the differences between religious beliefs are a great source of humour. I think we are much more tolerant now than we were. For instance, here's a note from the revised edition of an early thesaurus.
The account of religious terms towards the end of the book has been rearranged so that dissenters and nonconformists are no longer grouped with idolaters, fire worshippers, and other heathens.
Then there are the jokes that begin, there was a vicar, a Roman Catholic priest, and a rabbi. Alfred, have you got one on you?
Certainly. A rabbi and a Roman Catholic priest talking about their job prospects. What's your next move? Asked the rabbi. Well, I suppose if I'm lucky, I might get a parish of my own. And then? Well, perhaps I'd be made a canon, and if I was very lucky, maybe even a bishop. And after that? Well, I suppose it's just possible I could become a cardinal. Yes, and what after that? Well, it's ridiculous to think about it, but I suppose I could become pope, said the rabbi. And then? Well, that's it, said the Roman Catholic. I mean pope. There's only God after that. Well, said the rabbi, one of our boys made it.
The majority of English jokes about religious differences appear to be those between Anglican and Catholic. The Roman Catholic confessional is a very popular setting for jokes.
A tailor's assistant goes into the confessional and he says, "Oh, Father, I've sinned. I've stolen a roll of cloth from the tailor where I work." "Well," says the priest, "I hope you won't make a habit of it." "No, just a sports jacket."
The celibacy of priests comes in for a great deal of waggery.
A rabbi and a priest were talking, and the priest said to the rabbi, "Tell me, Rabbi, in your faith as a man of the cloth, you're not supposed to eat pork, are you?" He said, "No, we are not supposed to eat pork." He said, "Well, tell me quite frankly, man to man, have you ever tried it?" And the rabbi said, "Well, I must confess, as a young man, I did try it, yes." He said, "Father, as a man of the cloth in your faith, you are not supposed to have any social dealings with women, are you?" He said, "No, that's right, we're not, no." He said, "Well, tell me, man to man, have you ever tried it?" And he said, "Well, I must confess, as a young man, I did once." He said, "It's a bit better than pork, isn't it?"
I suppose that joke's the origin of the phrase, a piece of crackling. The church is concerned with both this world and the next. There are many jokes set at the pearly gates, where your life is assessed and you get your drafting for eternity. Here is a line from the Reverend Sidney Smith on one particular sinner.
His was the sort of career which would make the recording angel think seriously of taking up shorthand.
It's strange how we always seem to think of heaven in a worldly way, as if it were just like earth.
A bus driver goes up to heaven, and the first person he meets up there is his old bus inspector. "Hello, Ted. Hello, Ted," he says. "Fancy meeting you up here." "Not so much at a Ted," says the inspector. "What time did you leave the other end?"
Ting, ting. Another one along in a minute. I suppose the most popular setting for jokes about the church is the sermon. A good sermon can be uplifting, inspiring, an intellectual and spiritual feast.
"As I was on my way here tonight, I arrived at the station, and by an oversight, I happened to go out by the way one is supposed to come in. And as I was going out, an employee of the railway company hailed me. "Hey, Jack," he shouted, "where do you think you're going?" That, at any rate, was the gist of what he said. But, you know, I was grateful to him. Because, you see, he put me in mind of the kind of question I felt I ought to be asking you here tonight. Where do you think you're going? Very many years ago, when I was about as old as some of you are now, I went mountain climbing in Scotland with a friend of mine, and there was this mountain, you see, and we decided to climb it. And so, very early one morning, we arose and began to climb. All day, we climbed. Up, and up, and up. Higher and higher and higher, until the valley lay very small below us, and the mists of the evening began to come down, and the sun to set. And when we reached the summit, we sat down to watch this magnificent sight of the sun going down behind the mountains. And as we watched, my friend, very suddenly and violently, vomiting. Some of us think life's a bit like that, don't we? But it isn't. Life, you know, is rather like opening a tin of sardines. We're all of us looking for the key. And I wonder how many of you here tonight have wasted years of your lives looking behind the kitchen dressers of this life for that key. I know I have. Others think they've found the key, don't they? They roll back the lid of the sardine tin of life. They reveal the sardines, the riches of life they're in. And they get them out, they enjoy them. But you know, there's always a little bit in the corner you can't get out. I wonder, is there a little bit in the corner of your life? I know there is in mine.
Alan Bennett, bringing this programme to a close fittingly with his magnificent sermon from Beyond the Fringe. We better stop now before the collection. I don't think we've been too irreverent. We haven't been struck by lightning. I haven't been. Alfred hasn't been noticeably. Next week, we'll be being irreverent about The Office. Until then, from Alfred Marks and me, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Frank Muir Goes into the Church was produced by Simon Brett and Bob Oliver Rogers.